Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and my guest sidekick, Dan DuBose, CPA. Dan, how are you doing this morning?
Good, sir. Good morning.
Yes, very good. Very good. Good evening over here, but it is what it is, I suppose. It's not as hot here as it is there, which is hard to believe.
It is hot here.
Anyway. Well, as we normally say right about this time, just because you're listening today doesn't mean that you've become our client. We are happy to consider working with you. If you don't already have a CPA that understands how to analyze the topic matters that we discuss on this show, be it real estate private partnership investment or retirement 401k plan taxation and planning, and real estate private placements, which is typically a multifamily property, or lastly, zero tax math, which I know sounds inviting to many. However, we're typically referring to the golden years as you approach them. We try to help you align your income streams to be of the nature that don't get taxed, or more importantly, don't fill up your provisional income tax brackets so that you don't end up giving away a bunch of tax on your Social Security. And I think we're probably due for a show to talk about that concept in detail again. Dan, I don't know if we'll have time today, but we should spend some time on Social Security, and then also the notion of why zero tax math is important as we go barreling down the track to eclipsing the last of the discretionary piece of our federal budget, where we're going to have difficulty, if not an impossibility, of paying all the interest on the debt. So it's not a good scenario if you're a taxpayer, particularly a higher bracket taxpayer, because what's the projection now, Dan, that we're going to have to raise taxes by to keep from having an issue with the deficit? A couple
2032,
hundred percent?
For sure, 2032.
Well, 2029 to 2030, I think, is when we run out of the enough of the discretionary budget to where we've used it all for interest on the debt, and it's still not enough. And so that's theoretically going to cause some major depression-type issues here in the U.S. and probably around the world. But I think what you're referring to is even more near-term is when Social Security or Medicare or both are scraping the bottom of the barrel, and that's got to be rectified at about the same timeline as the budget. Of course, a lot of the budget issue is Social Security and Medicare, correct?
Exactly. That's right. Biggest part of our unfunded liability, unrecorded liability, I probably should say, you know, that cruel accounting we've talked about in the past where we don't record those liabilities, but we know we got to take them on at some point way out in the future, maybe 10, 20 years, but it's still there.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, let's take a look at some of the news we've got this week. And for those of you that haven't listened before, we load up some of the last week's news articles into the BAPlannersShow.com resources page. And that's what I'm looking at now. And Dan, pick a couple of those to dig in on. Which one?
Yeah, we've talked about senior housing a little bit in the past, and I think that's probably some significant these days to talk about because there's, you know, there. What's the number I read recently? There's 40 million people over age 65 today, and they're going to be double that within 10 years. So, you know, seniors are going to be moving into housing as such, and we see a lot of it these days, but, you know, they're raising the rents there too, so it's getting to be a higher demand, which does increase prices most of the time when you got a higher demand and a short supply. You know, I have a good friend, client of mine, that just recently moved in, and he complained going in about how much it cost, but he said it was still better than having to cut the grass and clean a pool, so he was glad to say it.
Well, and I'm assuming there's some medical care in there, although maybe not at his current status, but it has the prospect of providing that.
That's right.
And that's one of the
allures to it as well, is that, you know, there's that, you know, where you can have somebody take care of you or your spouse. So it is there. And as we get older and we're going to live longer, we're living longer these days. Rick Edelman recently reported that he's thinking we need to be using 100 or one, even 110 as the age project to not run out of money. Definitely,
boy,
he says the longevity now is 89. You know, we've been talking about 83, 84 based on IRS tables, but he's more like 89 is the number right now. But use that 100 to be safe as far as your projections are concerned.
Well, I think this article points out that rental rate increases are anticipated of, 3% or more over the next 12 months across most senior housing classes led by assisted living. So it's not the skilled nursing. The skilled nursing is probably higher. I don't know how that category came out. But, you know, it's all about convenience, and convenience costs money. And the United States is one of the best cultures at charging you for convenience, right?
Yeah.
You know, here in Southeast Asia, it's family. That's who your long-term or your assisted living is provided by, right? And the Asian cultures are just different. And in that regard, I would suggest it's typically better. It's not just different, it's better. Let's see here, Dan. How about the first article on that list, the new normal for apartment demand? This may surprise some people. It's not nearly as bleak as it sounds. And, of course, it depends on the economy and what areas you're looking at and, you know, what the absorption rate is in those areas. There's a lot that feeds into this. And so when you talk about averages, again, what do we say, Dan? Nobody's average. We're all normal, right? So, you know, it's good to talk about averages. Averages are for the marketing folks, right? So, anyway,
somewhere to have a number to compare, and that's one of the reasons we use that average, because the average is the average, you know. So it's a changing, you know, month to month. You know, we talk about the inflation rate and such as that. You know, we know what the inflation rate is compared to a year ago, or we think we do anyway. We play with that number every month. We're looking at that increase or decrease. Fortunately, now we're seeing some decreases, but average is a good one to measure from.
Well, and this article, which is it appeared in Globe Street's or on Globe Street's site, is actually RealPage Market Analytics that did the research, which we've also got their version of the same. I think it's the same article. I probably didn't realize that when I made a copy. In any event, they talk about a positive absorption number, I think 84,000 units for the country, which, you know, it compared to the immediate past is positive, but not compared to 20 years ago. And that's the point they're making on the demand numbers. You know, again, compared to the immediate past, it's great when you look at the last few months or maybe a couple years, but much weaker than the long-term norm of as far back as 20 years ago. So, you know, we'll take it. I mean, obviously, for people that are looking to invest, they want to see some stabilization, and I think that that's what this pretends of. It appears that we're not going to get hit with near the negative expectations that we might have had even as little as a month ago, right? So that's a good thing. Dan, we've also got an article out here. Well, I just noticed, you know, Phoenix is one of the markets we're on the air in, and so we're looking at news from that area quite a bit. And there's a sale that took place that I think shows the strength of that market. Let's see, it's $140 million. It worked out to 368,000 a door. And let me look here. I can't recall. 380 units. So, you know, that's probably not a new, well, no, it's not a new build. It was an acquisition. Well, 2022, so not too old. Six buildings with 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units. So, you know, still strong market. Phoenix, you know, has some upper-tier pricing, I guess you might say, but they've also got some upper-tier Class A apartment units. I'm presuming this would be a Class A at this location in this class of apartment. But people are still lending money, and this included a $70 million loan from Northwestern Mutual, big insurance company, and you know they're not those guys are not easy to borrow from, right, Dan? I mean
you got to be somewhat credit worthy to be getting some of that insurance money. So you know you got a pretty good operator probably with this one. You know they're going to put a lot of, they probably even got some equity in that, I would bet you.
Likely. Well, listen, we're right on top of the first break. Let's go ahead and take it, and we'll be back in a few minutes with more of the Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross and my guest host, Dan DuBose.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little more.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com, Nathan at NPRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of the Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross and Dan DuBose. Dan, I was there was one other article that I have up on the site that I wanted to talk about, just a couple of points in there. It's looking at the demographics or the demographical differences between renters and homeowners. And it also had a statistic on which areas of the country are predominantly or have more renters in the market than homeowners. And I thought, let me look here. I want to make sure this is the article I was thinking about. Yeah, it is. And essentially, the highest vacancy rate or highest rental vacancy rate was in the South, 8.3%, followed by the Midwest, West, and Northeast. And, you know, I think that, you know, is in line with what we might think, just given the cost of buying a home in the South and, you know, Midwest. You know, apparently there's a greater number of owners because it's a little bit easier, right? And it's interesting that this article, now again, I don't know, and this is coming from the U.S. Census Bureau's 2021 American Housing Survey, but the presumption or the conclusion, I guess, is that renters have less income and are less well-educated than their home-owning counterparts, but they are generally satisfied with their neighborhood's public transportation services and schools. I don't know. What do you think about that statement, Dan? You think that bears out with people we know?
You know, that's the first thing I thought about when I first looked at that. I thought, man, that's really a stretch, I think. But they do point out.
Yeah, I agree.
They do point out that the mean income of renters is $41,000 versus $78,000 for homeowners. So, I mean, somehow or another they pull that statistic. I guess that's out of the total 330 million people in this great country. You know, that when they pull all these statistics together, that's the way it pops out. But it just seems odd to me. But I guess it's because I live in Houston, you know, and I live in a more fluent area, I guess you might say. But it just doesn't look that way to me. You know, pay some of these rents around here, you better be having a big paycheck. You know, so in Houston, I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, again, this goes back to that average thing, right?
Yep.
And the median. Remember, this is the median that they're selecting as their benchmark. And if I'm not mistaken, that's simply you're counting down to the middle value from top to bottom, correct? It's not an averaging of all the values. So that could skew a little bit what our general perception is. I like the one about bachelor's degrees or higher or more prevalent in homeowners. Now that's interesting because it's 41.6 to 28. That's also where the higher student loan debt is, which you would think would impinge on one's ability to buy a home, right?
Yeah, it'll weaken their ability to buy a home these days unless you can get that part of that $39 billion that's going to be forgiven.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't see how that happens, but, you know.
I agree. I hope it doesn't. Yeah, article in the Wall Street Journal said, let's hope it doesn't happen. Is their closing article words?
Yeah, I saw that.
It's wrong.
I saw that article. Well, in any event, I think generally I would say the deck tilts a bit to the homeowner, but I'm not so sure it's again, this is on average. I promise you there's some areas, obviously New York or I don't know, probably even some of the cities in the Midwest like Kansas City or other places, maybe even Houston, where when you look at the volume of apartments, it's pretty staggering the number of apartments we've got and what's coming. It's not just what we've got, it's what is going to be on the ground in the next 12 to 18 months. So
number that sticks in my mind is that number you put out two or three weeks ago, but San Antonio was 18,000, and that's just a drop in the bucket of what the need is from what we read in other articles. We're looking at a shortage of, what was it, some article put out 300,000 to 400,000 units across the country are needed to, just to fill what they think is the demand. So, we're still short supply of housing is what the article was saying. And that's housing for rental, that's housing for purchase, the whole realm. But it's hard for me to believe that there's that much shortage still. Even with all the units that we get announced each year, the Greater Houston Builders Association does a statistic, and I can't remember the exact number, but it's huge. I mean, we're still building here, even with interest rates being at, the highest level they've been in quite some while. There's still stuff being built, not necessarily so much spec being built anymore, but they're still buying houses here. In Houston.
Well, and I was just looking at some stats on Houston, and I think this is just apartments, but there's currently an operating supply. I think this is the totality. It seems high, but 732,968. Could that have single-family homes in that number, too? That doesn't seem... Well, I guess it could be, because what are there, 6.5 million people now in the market area, the metropolitan, MSA? But in any event, there's 21,000 units under construction. That's got to be apartments. That's not single family. And then there's
mostly apartments.
And then there's 31,000 units proposed. And in terms of the number of recently opened is 21,000 plus. So those are some pretty robust numbers.
Robust,
the absorption,
indeed.
Well, the absorption number doesn't seem all that robust, 3,700 units. So I'm not sure. I don't want to say it's going to be a train wreck, but I'm going to say some of those proposed projects may not happen as quickly as they think. Average rental rate is $1.44, and the occupancy is about right at 90%, 89.6. But rental growth rate is down to 1.2%, which is probably in line with what we've seen in terms of actual, not pro forma. So in any event, that's Houston. And San Antonio's occupancy rate's about the same, 88%. Dallas is 91.6, so we would expect that. Dallas is kind of a hot market right now for syndicators. And Austin is about 88.6% occupancy. Rental rates, though, comparatively speaking, Austin is the highest at $1.86 a square foot. San Antonio's $1.41. Dallas is $1.71. And Houston is $1.44. So it's always interesting to compare the Texas markets, because that's where we've got so many clients that are invested in Texas syndications. Texas is a very robust apartment syndication area, and it's interesting to see, you know, what the rates are, what the per square foot numbers translate to, what the total number of units they've given concessions on. All that stuff helps us assess the merits of pro forma data as we're taking a look at analyzing projects for clients. And you know, for those of you that are thinking this may be a way to invest your money, I will say I don't know of any other asset class. I'm still waiting to be shown an asset class that has the potential to double your money consistently about every 4 to 5 years. And you know, I know it's not the oil and gas well. It's not the well, crypto has the potential to double it, certainly, very fast, and then, you know, cause it to become substantially less very fast as well. And I guess I would say the same thing about the stock market in general, although, you know, there's certain index funds, I suppose, that over time will, you know, provide a good return. But the problem that we see with so many of the clients we work with is they come to us when they're in their mid-50s to late-50s, and they're behind. They know they're behind the eight ball on their retirement wealth. And as Dan was just mentioning earlier, the longevity factor now is greatly increased. You know, we were talking off the air while we were waiting to come on about how, you know, back in the day, if you were like, let's say you had $1 million in your retirement accounts, you were kind of set, okay? And that even considering the tax hit. And, you know, so many people, when you ask them, well, what do you have in your retirement accounts, they'll say, oh, I've got, you know, $1.2 million. And we have to explain, well, no, you don't. You've got a lot less. We can't tell you how much less unless you're ready to do a Roth conversion now. And we put a tax rate on the conversion, and you know exactly how much you're going to pay. But if you fast forward 10 years, that tax rate is going to be higher and presumably a lot higher based on how large the deficits continue to grow. And so, you know, when you're in a higher bracket, which you will be, I mean, there's no ands, if, or buts about it. Once you get out past 2029 and 30, the rates, it's just a matter of math, they will have to go up. And so the smart money is taking the tax component now, bite the bullet, pay taxes at what essentially are the lowest rates since you've been alive, in most cases, maybe since you were 3 or 4 years old, if you're my age. In any event, now's the time. Take action. You can break the conversion of your dollars from pre-tax to Roth after tax. over a number of years. I would suggest, you know, 5 to 7 years is still possible. And you try to stay down below the 22 to 24% bracket. And again, I think it'll be the last time you see it in our lifetimes. I think the rates will go up, and it's not going to be a quick solution to the problems, but we're talking significantly higher tax rates, and that means you've got less money to live on in retirement to combat both the longevity risk and the tax rate risk. We can deal with the tax rate risk. The longevity risk is more in your camp because, you know, you're the one that's got to create the additional retirement wealth somehow, some way. We think that real estate private partnerships is a great way to do it. We've seen many people over the past 20 years or more that we've spent in this space make significant strides towards, you know, significantly increasing their retirement wealth. And once you understand both the amount of money that could be made on an apartment project and how money is made, more importantly, then you see, okay, there's a light at the end of the tunnel here if I can marshal my resources and get into the right transactions. And Dan and I don't tell you so much as to which transactions to get into. We can suggest which ones you might not want to get into based on the pro forma math, and we'll teach you enough about what to look for, and we'll actually hold your hand looking at prospective investments to tell you what you're signing up for. You know, that's what we see people get wrong so often, is understanding what they're signing up for with these syndications. They're somewhat complicated transactions. And for those of you that might be members of certain real estate investor platforms that eschew the need to look at the documents that describe the transaction, the anticipated rates of return, I've heard it said on the radio, you don't need to look at that. You just need to move forward, invest. You know, what's your fear? And I'm going to tell you, there's a lot to be afraid of if you don't know how to analyze the deal documents, the private placement memorandum, the operating agreement, to where you understand whether the next transaction meets your objectives or whether you need to keep looking, because your objectives will be different than others. If you're older and looking to start living on your retirement, well, your needs and objectives are going to be different than someone that's younger and working another 15 years or more, and they don't have to start pulling money out of the retirement portion of their savings for quite some time. And so you have to understand the projected values and the projections of the pro forma data to understand how the specific project you're considering we'll meet those. But anyway, Dan, let's go ahead and grab the last break. And when we come back, I think we're going to be talking about a transaction that's already closed. But as we're learning these days, many times the syndicators get hit with surprises as they get closer to closing, and even after closing, and may come back for some more funding. So I thought we'd go ahead and talk about it. It's one that we can do a little bit of education with. And so anyway, we'll talk about that when we get back here momentarily. We'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner show.
And you are a teacher. You are a reacher. So reach down. Shelter of your care each day. 'Cause I am a seeker and you are a keeper. You are a leader. Won't you show me the way?
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement?
BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and Dan DuBose. And Dan, let's pivot, and you want to discuss a transaction that is DFW area, is that right?
Yeah, Dallas, Fort Worth, Arlington, they listed as.
Okay, and give me a little, I don't have access to that one. I know which one you're talking about. I'm not sure why it's not showing up.
I think it's it is closed, but it's an interesting one, I think, because it's the operator has quite a history, it looks like, from what they're offering or what is in the offering page. I see the it's a $76 million deal with a 65% loan on it, so it's got some good equity in it, or good debt, I should say, too. The it's got a minimum $25,000 self-directed is allowed.
Yeah, what's the hold time, Dan?
3 years. They're expecting 3 years, and first distribution expecting first quarter of 2024. So it just happens. It happened in June. So, get things straightened out in 6 months and then get some money out in first quarter of next year. So it sounds like a rather alluring deal for somebody who wants some cash flow coming out soon.
It's being classified as a value add. And I guess for those that may be new to the whole concept of how we make money in apartments, the value add, there's basically two categories. There's value add, and then there's hold, for acquisition. Some people refer to that as a yield play, meaning that the former, the value add, has a number of attributes that are not pristine. It's either deferred maintenance or it's a property that's got the ability to add certain things, amenities like wood-like flooring, maybe stainless appliances, maybe a bark park for the dogs, maybe covered parking, smart home packages. These are ways to incrementally increase revenues. As you incrementally, or maybe not incrementally, maybe all at once, enhance or upgrade the property. And so when you're a syndicator and you're looking for properties that, you know, fit your business model, you're trying, if you're looking for value add opportunities, you're looking at properties that have not had those enhancements made. If they've already been made, then unless the syndicator is just not able to understand what the market rate of rents are in that area, there's not much room for you to enhance the bottom line, which is what we refer to as net operating income, which net operating income combined with a cap rate is the way we determine what a property is worth. So if we can identify a property that has significant value add opportunities, then that means there's a significant opportunity to raise the top line rental growth, which is one reason we talk about, as we were a few minutes ago, the rental growth rate of a given area and a given property, because that directly impacts the ability for us to raise the value of the property by adding amenities. And of course, we're trying to price our product as the market would dictate, you know, by looking at competing properties down the street or in the area. It doesn't help you. You go spend a bunch of money on a property that won't allow you to raise the rental rates. That's not going to do much for you, because you're not going to have anybody in the property if you do that, because they're going to live down the street where it's the same amount of rent and perhaps the same or even better amenities. So the syndicator has to know the market, and they have to have been to the finish line before on taking a beat up old Class C apartment building and knowing how to spend the money to understand what the bottom line result will be in terms of the increased value. And the ones that are really good know that for every dollar they spend, there can be a $10 to $20 increase in value. And so it's a matter of spending it the right way. And then it's also a matter of doing it in a fashion where you don't go out of business before you're done. And that's more of an art than you might think. But, you know, the holding cost, Dan, will kill you as a syndicator if you can't move fast enough to keep some cash flow coming. And the trick is to renew leases or to move existing tenants into units as you get them ready, so that you never go, the faucet never gets turned all the way off on rental collections. But that's, again, it's easier said than done. But
you know, reading further down in this offering, there's, you know, Dallas, we were talking about earlier, you said their occupancy is at 91.6%, the next to the highest in the country, or in the state, I'm behind Austin, but that's exactly what they mentioned in their write-up. They're at 91% occupancy right now, and working that up, I'm sure that, and they say that that's the sub-market average, so that's right in line with the article we read earlier, too, so.
Yeah,
sound like,
well,
you're going to do well, project. Yeah, you know, these guys have done $9.4 billion worth of property before, so they've done
big time operator, been to the finish line many times.
Yeah,
and that's what you typically will want to look for if you're playing the big market or big apartment market game.
Which and, is 400 units, so it's a big apartment project.
Yeah. Compare that or contrast that to small apartments. And for those that think, you know, there's not much money in the small apartments, I'm going to differ with you. I'm going to tell you that the average small apartment, and we're talking 8 to 30 units, typically there's more value add possibilities with that type of project. Dan, why would you think that might be? What are some of the reasons you could offer up that would explain why there's more value add generally smaller properties?
Probably because it's been mom and pop operating, they've ignored it, let the maintenance go on it, haven't managed it properly.
Yeah, and they don't do market surveys to know what the market rate rent is. That they don't necessarily utilize technology the same way.
Don't utilize the best financing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, it's amazing the amount of money that falls through the cracks just because they didn't know. And you know, let's face it, we all get tired of doing what we do from time to time. And is it easier to keep somebody in a unit instead of raising their rent and taking a chance that, oh, gee, now I've got to go find another tenant? And so all these things build up over the years to where at some point, it becomes very attractive to a party that does have adequate financing and does have a good management company, or they have their own good management style. And so I'm going to suggest that there's multiple ways of looking at this issue, but I'm going to tell you, with all the fees that we see charged on these bigger projects, the small apartment game is – it's much more of an opportunity to not have your capital diluted as significantly as is what's happening typically in the larger syndications today. I mean, this property right here, I don't know if you have the fee structure at your fingertips, Dan, but I'm assuming, you know, 2% acquisition fee, probably 2% disposition fee, and then a lot of stuff in between. And, that's on top of the override, or what we call the promote, that's given to the syndicator or the sponsor, which is typically on a transaction like this going to be 20 to 30%. And then it probably scales up once they get a certain IRR, or internal rate of return, back to the investor.
Acquisition fee of 0.75%, you know, 75%.
Oh, well, that's not bad.
That is.
Yeah, that's not bad. What's the disposition fee, or do you see that handy?
They don't show that, but they got a construction management fee of 7.5% of CapEx, so they're estimating that at $550,000.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, and they do, you know, so that's, they do have a hurdle rate of 10%, so the investor gets 100% until they got 10%. When you say hurdle rate, 10% preferred to the investor, 10% and promote zero, and then after 15, it's an 80-20 split. So that's a pretty reasonable deal there, too, it looks like.
That is, if we're interpreting that correctly.
Let's 10% see, not non-compounded.
Yeah. What's the debt structure on this one, Dan?
65%.
It's only 3 years, so.
Yeah.
Say again?
65% debt to equity. So it's a $76 million deal total, almost $200,000 per unit, $191,000.
Yeah. Well, that sounds rational. 55% LTV.
65%.
Oh, 65. Okay. Well, that's more palatable. But
yeah.
I'm surprised the fees aren't higher for a group like this. I hope we're looking at that correctly.
Yeah, those are the numbers that they published, fee summary.
Yeah. And a $200,000 per unit acquisition seems pretty reasonable, too. How old are these things? They must be 70s. Circa 1970 or so?
They don't look all that old. Like, evidently, they've done a lot of upgrades with the former owner, but they, you know, picture-wise, they look very current. But, you know, I couldn't find in here the age. I know it's in here, but I just haven't seen it for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, we're coming to the end of the show. Curious if you had any final remarks on this one or any of the news we talked about, what we need to watch out for.
We need to watch out for living too long, run out of money. You know, look at that 100-year, 110 years. Man, that's a real thing nowadays with 89 pushed up. You know, we've been talking most recently about, you know, 84, 85, man, woman, but now we're looking at 89. That's 5 years, and that's just in a short time. And I think what's going to happen between now and those, you know, next 27 years for you, you know, you got how long you going to live by the time you're 89? You're going to have 120, maybe. You know, it's just
yeah.
There's good things happening in the science world that's making us live longer, but we just got to manage our money accordingly.
Yeah, a lot of those genomes are making their way to the commercial market now, right?
Yeah, that were that's right.
discovered, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But anyway, well, you know, we didn't talk about one article, and I think I uploaded it, about how Austin is going to be the next San Francisco. Did
oh,
I fail
goodness.
To upload that article? I may have, but that's what those that assessed it are saying, and I have a good friend that lives over there that knows most of the people that were interviewed for that article that said they didn't tell them half the metrics. It's much worse than what came out in that article. So
yeah, and Austin's got an 89% occupancy with the highest rental rates, according to that article you read earlier, too. So.
True.
I mean, go figure
well,
that out.
I'm hearing the end of the show music starting, Dan, so I'm going to bid you adieu, and we'll come back next week and love to have you same listeners come as well. Thank you,
Nathan.
You bet.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.